Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the APM Human Services International H1 FY22 results call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I'd now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Megan Wynne, Founder and Executive Chair. Please go ahead.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for our first results presentation as a listed company, covering the half year ended 31 December 2021. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Megan Wynne, and I'm the Founder and Executive Chair of APM. I'm joined today by Mike Anghie, our Group CEO, and Steve Fewster, our Group CFO. I'd like to start by welcoming our new shareholders and thanking all of you for your support of APM. Since listing, our focus has not changed. Our people's commitment to enabling better lives for our clients, despite the operating challenges presented by COVID-19, is apparent in our results. Not only have we achieved strong results for our clients and customers, importantly, we've delivered on our promises to our shareholders. Our strong business and operational results come as no surprise to me, for as I said on the day of listing, our drive to be the best at all we do and our competitive streak ultimately serves our clients, customers, and stakeholders. Today, I could not be happier with the performance of the APM business, its operations, our leadership team, and the commitment of our people to our purpose. APM has a long history of delivering on its promises. At APM, we do what we say we'll do, and today, Mike and Steve will outline our strong results and our accomplishments during this period. I'll now hand over to Mike Anghie, our Group CEO.
Thank you, Megan. Good morning and good evening, everyone, wherever you are. We'll break the session into three sections using the presentation lodged on ASX this morning as a base. Firstly, I'll cover the key highlights and business overview of the first half, then pass to Steve to go into the financials in more detail, and then I'll share our outlook, key priorities, reaffirmation of our prospectus forecast, and increased FY22 guidance. Then there'll be time to answer questions. As you can see from slide four, APM has performed strongly in the first half of 2022. Today, we not only reaffirmed our prospectus forecast and released half-year results that delivered strong growth across all key measures, we also increased our FY22 guidance given the contributions from the acquisitions of Lifecare in Australia and Klarstedt in Sweden. For the half, revenue grew 29% to 613.7 million dollars. Pro forma earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization, EBITDA, grew 17% to 138.8 million dollars. Pro forma net profit after tax and before amortization, NPATA, grew 38% to 77 million dollars, and we generated over 138 million of pro forma operating cash flows, up 18%. Lastly, we've closed out the period with a strong balance sheet and low leverage of 1.8x. Turning to slide five. We've continued to deliver on our strategy and what we outlined in our prospectus as our key steps for growth, with many achievements that ensure we have a strong platform for long-term growth. Our core business continues to perform well with mobilization of new contracts and contract performance. In terms of talent acquisition and retention, in some areas of our business, we're seeing tightness in labor markets. However, APM's position as a market leader in the sector and a respected and diverse employer has supported our ability to continue to retain and attract great people. Our diversity is evidenced across our 9,300 team members. Over 50% of our senior leadership team are female. The age span of our workforce is 18-76, and approximately 19% of our team have a lived experience with disability. We've continued to invest in leadership capability, recruiting 11 new senior leaders since listing. In terms of wage pressure, overall, this is manageable within our existing contract conditions and operating structure. The highest priority talent challenge is across allied health, which has been impacted by a number of factors, including lack of mobility, market demand, the overall pressure on health services, and blocks in graduation processes that require clinical training. These dynamics are now starting to improve. Despite these challenges, our investment in the allied health strategy has resulted in a reduction of overall turnover by 2 percentage points, reduced vacancy rates to 5%, and increased the level of applications we receive for key roles by 150% from 4 to 10. We've invested in IT across the business and critically met the right fit for risk requirements of the Department of Education, Skills and Employment to operate their contracts. We've completed a number of strategic platform acquisitions that will be integrated and embedded into APM, including entering the Swedish employment services market, and will invest in expansion and seek to support an increased demand through our ecosystem. Looking forward, you'll see more of the same. Expansion and investment into allied health and disability and aged care businesses, given the significant opportunities in this market. Continue to pursue tender pipeline, mobilise new contracts and assess strategic M&A opportunities to build scale in priority markets. We await the results of the NESM tender in Australia and other contract opportunities. We've recently been awarded three regions in the transition to work market commencing on 1 July 2022. This is a market traditionally serviced by training organisations and not-for-profits. Our initial market share is akin to the market share we won when we first entered the job active market in 2015. For us, this is a good opportunity to deliver a new program for government and expand through strong performance over time. And as a business, we'll continue to bring in new skills and leverage existing core business. I'd like to thank our leadership team who have navigated the varying operating conditions across our business during the peak of Delta and through the emergence of Omicron, kept our people safe, and ensure that we continue to provide exceptional service for our clients and customers and deliver on our promises to our shareholders. Thank you also to the 9,300 APMers around the world that work each day to support our clients and customers. They do an amazing job enabling better lives for the people we support. As a business, ESG is embedded in everything we do. You can see this from the multiple data points on slide 6. That reinforce the social impact APM generates. Through the services we provide, we make a real and lasting positive impact on the lives of those we support, the communities where they live, and for the stakeholders who engage us. During the first half, we issued our Disability and Diversity Index, highlighting the value that people with disability bring to the economy, with an aim to increase awareness and participation rates in employment. Before I speak about Australia, if I can say more broadly, across our operations, we've seen varying conditions in the major economies in which we operate and continue to manage and operate our businesses through whatever challenges have been thrown at us through COVID-19 and its variants. Government policies, in many cases, have suspended job seeker engagement obligations at times and flow into programs, particularly for higher risk populations such as people with disability, leading to lower labour force participation rates. In other cases, economic recovery has outpaced expectation, resulting in lower than anticipated unemployment rates. Our business has operated successfully through varying market conditions since its inception 28 years ago and continues to do so today. On balance, strong economic conditions and low unemployment rates represent increased opportunity for those in our programs to find sustainable employment, especially for our clients in disability employment programs and our more disadvantaged job seekers. Turning to Australia on slide 8. The Australian business has performed strongly, delivering 15% revenue growth to $300 million and 33% NPAT growth to $56 million. This has been achieved in a market that has been disrupted with shutdowns and restricted movement of talent. During the first half, employment services performed well despite the COVID-19 related operating challenges. And even though we're experiencing low unemployment and observed labour shortages, employment services caseloads remain above pre-pandemic levels. Our vocational training business has grown strongly, supporting the needs of the people we service and the emerging growth sectors. During the half, we commenced the residential aged care assessments contract and acquired Generation Health, contributed to the first half performance. We completed the acquisitions of LifeCare, Early Start Australia, MyIntegra and Mobility, as these businesses are being integrated into APM. We'll continue to invest in these platform businesses to expand their operations nationally, leveraging our physical presence and our strong community connections. The continued expansion of our health and wellbeing business is a key priority as we continue to grow our allied health services across a whole of life offering. The acquisitions of the Life Care and Early Start businesses will accelerate our strategy in this area through the opening of new sites, recruitment of talent, and new customer pathways. To meet the growing in-home community care demand, we'll build upon the Life Care in-home business and the mobility platform. In our disability business, My Integra Plan Management plays an important role in helping people with disability, their families and carers, to maximise the possibilities of their NDIS plan. Our current client funds under administration are $623 million at 31 January 2022. Turning to slide 9, our European results are largely reflective of the strong growth in the UK business, with overall revenue growing to $176.1 million and NPATA to $13.8 million. These results reflect the strength of the employment services business and commencement of the Restart contract, the improved performance of the health business, and the youth contract operating a summer season. During the period, we've successfully mobilised a Restart contract, opening 25 offices, recruiting 720 team members, and having over 31,000 program starts. The Restart contract is delivering in line with our expectations. Presently, referral volumes and job starts in the Restart program are performing across our contract regions, well above our customers' expectations. We entered the Swedish employment services market through the acquisition of Costera in late January 2022, providing an exciting opportunity to grow our business across that market through investment in people and sites. As outlined on slide 10, North America has grown to $98.3 million revenue and $4.2 million NPATA as a result of the acquisition and integration of DWFS. The full half-year operation of DB Grant, the Canadian Ontario Employment Program in the Peel region, and new contract wins expanding our business in the US to 24 states. Our recent acquisitions in the US, which are predominantly cost-plus contracts, have changed the mix of the North American business, and this is reflected in lower overall margins. We've now also entered the Job Corps market in the US. Job Corps is a no-cost education and vocational training program that helps young people improve the quality of their lives by empowering them to get great jobs and become independent. Job Corps has a total annual program funding of US $1.7 billion and will now seek more opportunities in this large program. Together with our joint venture partner, we're well into the preparation for the Rehabilitation Services and Vocational Assistance Program for veterans in Canada that will commence in January 2023. Turning to slide 11, Asia-Pacific performance has been temporarily impacted by COVID-19 lockdowns in New Zealand and disruptions in other markets. Revenue declined to $38.8 million and NPATA was $3.1 million. The company expects these markets to recover and this region to return to normal operations and growth. I'll now pass to Steve to discuss APM's financial results in more detail.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. As you just heard, we grew revenue in Australia, Europe and North America, which was partially offset by the Asia-Pac performance. As outlined on slide 13, on a consolidated basis, revenue for the half increased by $137.8 million or 29% to $613.7 million. Pro forma NPATA increased 38% to $77 million, reflecting the growth in Australia and Europe, as well as the continued benefits of scale. As outlined in the prospectus, APM expected its financial performance in the second half to be higher than the first half. This is due to the first half being impacted by the COVID-19 extended lockdowns on the east coast of Australia and parts of Asia-Pac. Also, the commencement and ramp-up of the Restart contract and a part-period contribution from Generation Health and DWFS. At a pro forma NPATA level, the half-on-half split is more even, with lower depreciation in the first half due to the timing of CapEx for Restart. Moving to slide 14, pro forma operating cash flow pre-interest and tax was $138.4 million, up 18% on the prior comparative period. This resulted in an EBITDA cash conversion rate of 100%. During the half, APM's investment activities included the payment of $76.4 million for the businesses we acquired, plus $37.2 million on capital expenditure. This capital expenditure included the assets required for the restart contract, an IT refresh for the acquired businesses, and our ongoing investment in cyber and data security. Lastly, APM completed its ASX listing, raising $343.5 million, including the proceeds from the settlement of the management equity plan. APM applied $160 million of these proceeds to retire part of its USD-denominated debt. The capital restructure as part of the IPO also reduced the interest paid in the half by $10.6 million. Turning to the balance sheet on slide 15. The significant movements on the balance sheet were primarily attributable to the IPO and business combination acquisitions. Since 30 June 2021, APM's cash balance increased by $114.5 million to $221.3 million. Following the $160 million debt repayment and the conversion of shareholder loans to equity, net debt decreased by $1.2 billion. Consequently, APM's leverage is 1.8 times pro forma EBITDA, including lease liabilities. The businesses we acquired in the half increased intangibles by $163 million, which was partially offset by amortisation charges in the period. That completes my presentation of the first half financials. I'll now hand back to Mike.
Thanks, Steve. As we can see from slide 17, the macro trends for our business remain unchanged and underpin APM's long-term growth. Governments around the world need better solutions to deliver on policy priorities that can change rapidly. Social welfare programs that reflect long-term societal commitments and priorities are facing rising demand. We believe APM is well placed to partner with our stakeholders and be a trusted provider in current and future programs. We provide critical support for our clients as they progress towards employment, recover from injury or illness, or live the best possible life with disability or as they age. And as mentioned, whilst we observe lower than expected unemployment and labour shortages, employment services caseloads remain above pre-pandemic levels. For example, in Australia, while there are 580,000 considered unemployed in the current Australian Bureau of Statistics labour force data, there are actually 1.2 million job seekers on the two main employment services caseloads in December 2021 working with providers. Increasing lifespan also drives the longer term demand for services that we provide, including allied health, community care and employment. Programs and services that address societal need must represent value for money and support positive outcomes for clients, and ultimately be delivered by organisations that provide transparent, high-quality, consistent and independent services at scale. And we believe this favours organisations such as APM. Turning to slide 18, APM has successfully operated for 28 years across markets with varying economic conditions, and now through the past 24 months of the pandemic. Our historical and current results demonstrate the ability of the business to be proactive and nimble operationally to adapt to the market that exists at any point in time. Looking forward, we're pleased to be able to reaffirm our prospectus forecast and intend to pay a dividend from second half NPATA. We've increased our FY22 earnings guidance for the acquisitions of Lifecare and Clustera, which will add NPATA of $2.5 million for the second half, resulting in our revised pro forma NPATA forecast for FY22 of $157.6 million, up from the prospectus forecast of $155.1 million. In closing with slide 19, APM is uniquely placed to grow, being a leading provider of health and human services covering large addressable markets in multiple geographies globally. What we do makes a positive and lasting difference in people's lives. Our founder-led experienced team has consistently delivered strong outcomes for all stakeholders, including shareholders. With attractive fundamentals and multiple growth opportunities available, not only did we reaffirm prospectus forecasts and the board's intention to start paying a dividend from the second half, but also we increased our FY22 pro forma NPATA guidance. We're passionate about what we do and how we help people and are very focused on growing shareholder value. That completes the formal part of our presentation today, and we welcome questions from the investors on the call. Thank you.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Michael Peet from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Megan, Mike and Steve, congrats on the first result as a listed company. Thanks for taking my questions. The first one is just on the pipeline. Could you just comment a little bit more on what's your, if there's extra sort of tenders that have come in since the IPO, and you mentioned a couple of wins, if you can quantify those maybe, but just interested in how that pipeline's filling. And maybe a comment also, sorry, on NESM in terms of what you're hearing in terms of timing or on award of that one.
Thanks. Thanks, Michael. As we said at the time of the prospectus, we have many tenders in progress. The most significant of these are NESM, and I'll come to NESM, self-employment assistance, which is formerly the NEIS program, functional assessments in the UK, and the phase one of the Ontario tender in Canada, that are the main ones that are in progress as we speak. There's a number of new opportunities that we expect to come to market and have been starting to shape at the moment, including the LAC re-procurement expected in early 2022 and integrated assessments, which is combining ACATS, RAS and RACA, aged care and residential assessments. And they're taking shape in terms of timing for tenders. And as you'd know, in LAC, we're a very small provider in a predominantly not-for-profit market, but we'll seek to grow in that area. And in aged care assessments, we're a larger provider. In terms of NESM, we feel that the timing for NESM usually, or for large contracts in the Australian marketplace, will be somewhere around mid to late March 22. And for us, we're performing very strongly under our current contract, at approximately 20% above the market across the key KPIs. And we do believe we've submitted a quality bid, and we feel we're well placed to continue to be a key partner of government in that NESM contract going forward.
Thanks for that. Next one maybe for Steve. If I'm not mistaken, the first half Australian margin looks to be a bit over 18%, but I think prospectus was sort of 14% for the full year. Is there a reason why the second half should be down so much, or is that sort of maybe some upside risk potentially as you head into the second half?
We think the second half will see ongoing growth in revenue. In the first half, I think we've benefited a bit by the way we've managed our costs through the COVID and the lockdowns. So that reflects the good work that's been done by our leadership team. I think overall, though, we expect that the trends that we're seeing at the moment to continue. And hence that's why we're reaffirming those prospectus forecasts.
Okay, thanks. Final one for me, just on UK restart. I guess there's been some headlines of lower unemployment, but it seems like a strong start. I mean, is there a cash difference here to P&L in terms of what you reported here? But more importantly, what gives you comfort that you're on track to sort of meet the longer term goals of that contract?
Michael, maybe it's Mike Angie, I'll just take that and then Steve can add anything. But yes, restart is tracking in line with APM's expectations, which takes into account our experience of large scale complex contracts in the UK and other markets. We're certainly seeing that as success under the program relies on many factors, including program starts, placement rates, milestones reached, and the timing of meeting milestones. And presently in our two regions, Central London and Greater Manchester, and in the UK sense, you have the whole region, the client volumes are significantly higher than discussions with government and placement rates are strong. So these factors combined are critical performance and give us confidence about the future in terms of restart.
Yeah, that's great.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Gretel Janu from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Megan, Michael and Steve. If we just start with the outlook, so you've reiterated Perspectives forecast, but I guess has there been any change in mix at an NPATA perspective? Because Australia was very strong in the first half to meet Perspectives forecast in last week's second half, but Europe and APAC were a bit weaker in first half. So I guess how are we thinking about the mix into second half?
Yeah, so running into the second half, Europe will make a larger contribution on the back of the restart contract running pretty much at full or close to full capacity. That will increase the weighting of the European contribution to overall NPATA, and that will then have an over, you know, on a mix basis, that will have a bearing on the full year NPATA margin.
And so from an Australian perspective, are you expecting growth half on half at an NPATA line for Australia?
In our forecast, that's what we're expecting to see. The first half was impacted by the lockdowns, particularly on the East Coast, and that's had an impact on our health businesses as well as some of our employment services businesses. So we expect to see an improvement.
So with both that in mind, with Europe ramping up and Australia also seeing an improvement, does that not imply that the guidance or the outlook is quite conservative for the full year?
So we're comfortable, and I go back to the prospectus. We always said the second half would be stronger for the reasons outlined. The opening of the East Coast, the undoing of the lockdowns through Asia Pac, and that second half performance of restart with that contract ramping up, that was always factored in.
Great. Excellent. And then just moving on to cash flow, I think in the prospectus we were expecting a bit of a working capital build with regards to the ramp up of the restart program. You still achieved 100% cash conversion here. So I guess what are we expecting any working capital build in the second half?
Yeah, I'd expect in that restart contract as that client flow comes to full capacity, that we'll see some working capital build up. I think we were a little bit pleasantly surprised with the first half in terms of where that ended up. I think we're pretty neutral from 30 June to 31 December in terms of working cap movement.
Okay, great. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thanks, Gretel.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Tim Plumbe from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a couple of questions from me, if that's all right, and just a follow-on from Mike's question around the UK restart program. Just wondering if you can give us any colour in terms of initial placement rates versus expectations. Can you remind us again how to think about the earnings profile of this contract over the next few years and maybe how that might have changed given the changes by the UK government that came through recently?
Thanks, Tim. From a restart perspective, the initial modelling was done at 34% placement rates, and the placement rates are performing at a higher level than that. So the contract in terms of the maturation, I mean, at the time we would have talked about maturation of the contract and starting from a zero position and how that contract evolves over time. So it's continuing to mature as we'd expect, but a combination between placement rates and client flows and timing to achieve the milestones in this program all contribute to why we're saying the contract is performing well.
Got it. And then just the second question's around DES. Obviously, we've got the Royal Commission that's going on at the moment. Just wondering if you can make any comments in terms of what's happening in relation to those proceedings, and then maybe if you're able to talk about your star ratings relative to the peers, how that's changed between the two periods, and any scope for recontract changes amongst the operators.
Yeah, thank you. So the Royal Commission's focus is violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation of people with disability. As we understand, under the Royal Commission, there was a complaint made against a DES provider. This provider was new to DES in 2018 with no prior experience and they're actually in front of the Royal Commission as we're speaking now. As you would have heard me say, the DES program's results were impacted by the introduction of new inexperienced providers who had no skills at dealing with the complex issues associated with disability employment. So by way of example, the average star rating providers in the DES program who are in the old program that moved to the new program is 3.4 stars, and new providers is well below 3 stars, and this provider is well below 3 stars. So the current hearing is around this provider and their actions in terms of referring their participants into their own internal business that they set up, and then actions around how they would move their participants through their business and out of their business once they hit milestones, and then back in again, which is a practice which is unheard of in terms of long-term providers and people that have been operating for extended periods. In terms of the reform that you speak about, what we're seeing there is that the DES reference group is still performing its review. The future of the disability employment services sector is quite critical to Australia's economy, and the reform process does provide a unique opportunity to build on this success and to pilot and test alternative models. None of the task force have actually completed their work, and there's been over 140 submissions. And as we understand it at the moment, the data shows that the DES program is meeting its targets since the reform. There's been a 37 or 38% increase on 4-week job outcomes, a 41% increase on 26-week job outcomes, and all the DES KPIs that were set in 2021 are on track to be achieved. So what the reference group is asking for is that the Commonwealth takes time to consider any changes, that they extend the program by 12 months, which we're still awaiting to hear, and that they don't rush into any DES reforms like they had in the past. Under our DES contract, we've increased our star ratings. We're currently at 3.92 stars. The next star rating measurement will come out, I think it's next week, publicly. What we understand, though, is that there will be a business reallocation for the first time under the DES contract in this half, and that will be a reallocation from underperforming providers to performing providers, and we're very much looking forward to that reallocation.
That's great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Marcus Bernard from Bell Potter. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning all. Congratulations on maiden results. I wondered if you could help me. Your revenue grew by 29%. I wonder if you could give me a feeling of how much of that was a sort of organic growth within the business, how much of it was sort of from contract wins, and how much of it was from acquisitions. I appreciate it's a somewhat vague question, but if you could sort of provide...
No, it's a great question. It's something we keep a close eye on. So in terms of that split, 65% of that came organically. And when we talk organically, that's from our existing business plus contract wins. The remaining 35% came through acquisition. So that's the acquisition of Gen Health, DWFS, and then there was an additional 3 months contribution compared to last year from DB Grant.
Okay, so that's quite a high organic growth rate. So thank you for that, and that's very helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
Your next question is a follow-up question from Tim Plum from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, just a follow-up from me. Just in terms of the US opportunity, obviously a very fragmented market over there, and you guys have expanded out into a couple of new states. Just want to understand how you're thinking about that geography, whether there's further expansion opportunities into other states, and whether there, or what are the challenges or the impediments or the things that you need to overcome in terms of broadening that reach further?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. So yes, we're now in 24 states, which is fantastic. We just won a contract in San Diego, so now we've moved from, central and east US to West Coast, which creates a new market opportunity for us, and has been it's challenging to enter those new markets. So I think our team across Ross and DWFS and DB Grant are doing an exceptional job. For us also, the exciting entry into Job Corps, which is a very large a market where we're a very small player now through our entry into that, creates opportunities, and now we'll chase hard the new tender opportunities. And as you may recall, the US has a different cycle. It's very much short contracts, re-tendering regularly, and smaller contract values. So you get a good opportunity to increase your market share on the back of good performance on a more regular basis. And, you know, like the US, they always call it season. So every year is a bidding season, and we're in that bidding season as we speak. So what we have got now is a business operating in 24 states. We've invested in management. We have a US CFO, a US talent leader, and we now are looking at adjacent areas that we're market leaders in other segments, such as aged care, veterans, disability, and allied health, that we can start to look at broader market opportunities in the US. And as some of you may have read, on March 3rd, we'll be allowed to leave the Western Australian borders and actually travel. So we might be able to go and build some relationships and actually meet some people outside of Western Australia.
Nice. Just one other question in terms of tax, and I might have done this incorrectly, but the tax rate looks a fair bit lower in the first half relative to the full year. Should we be expecting an uplift in terms of second half tax rate?
In the prospectus, we guided an effective tax rate of 22%, and I think the first half was 22% as well. So you'd expect the same.
Okay, I'll have to go back through my calculations. Thanks for that.
Okay.
Cheers, Tim.
Thank you. Your next question is from Preston Hammersley from Indian Pacific. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Well done on the result. Sorry to harp on this, but just going back to Gretel's question, you know, that Aussie number is very strong. Can you just clarify that there's no one-offs there in the first half? And obviously, so in addition to that, there was some disruption to in-person services in the first half. The job market, the unemployment market's very tight, and tighter than I would imagine you expected at prospectus. So just if you can give some colour on what's going on there and how that tighter unemployment market is impacting you. And then lastly, you know, staying on Australia, just to be clear, the business reallocations in DES, are they occurring, let's sort of, you know, be marked around March also?
So I'll just quickly pick up on whether there was any one-offs in the financials for the first half, and Mike will pick up the rest of that. So in terms of the first half, there were no one-offs. That's the recurring business.
Okay.
So Preston, in terms of, you know, if you think about the business in Australia, yes, we operated through the shutdowns in the East Coast. Obviously, our business performs much better, and the people that we support are not suited by markets that are in and out of opening and closing. For us, as I mentioned earlier, the actual employment services caseload that we're supporting and other providers are supporting is significantly higher than the unemployment data that we read. And for us, our job is to move people closer to the labour market, closer to the opportunity to actually get employment, and, you know, being willing, able and ready and capable is a critical part of what we do. So not everyone is employment ready, and we need to continue to work with our clients in doing that. In terms of DES reallocation, whilst we expect that reallocation to happen in the middle of this half, timing is never certain with government departments. So we think it will happen as, you know, there'll be a star rating release next week, a public star rating release, And then we think the department will work from there on those star ratings as the basis for the reallocation that will occur towards the middle of the half.
Okay, that's very useful. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up question from Michael Peet from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Just wanted to clarify, Mike, did I hear you correctly? Next week was the reallocation potentially from underperforming to performing under DES?
No, sorry, Michael. Just if I clarify again. So next week there'll be a release of star ratings, which will be the December star ratings. We understand that those star ratings will then form the basis of the reallocation that will occur, and we think that actual reallocation will occur towards the middle of the half once they reassess, because there's a communication process with providers. There's a dialogue with each provider that's going to have business taken away from them. So there is a show cause opportunity. So it doesn't all happen and they, you know, what you hear and you start without a dialogue. There is a dialogue that happens.
Understood. And just, do you know much yet about the details? Are you potentially going to pick up market share in the regions that you're already in, or could you actually pick up new regions as well?
Look, what we expect, so what normally happens with allocations is that they're based on the stars. Basically, you have to be 2-star and below for 4 quarters to actually have your business at risk. And then after that, you're then allocated work. I mean, we could potentially go into new regions, but it's probably more likely that we will go into, they could ask us to go into new regions, I think, but we may not. Yeah, we would go into any region they offer us, but they may not be the regions we'd like to be. But it's more likely they'll allocate business to us within an existing region, which will then we can operate from day one easily without disruption to the clients.
And I think you're sort of around about 18% share in that contract. Is there a 20% ceiling there, and would they allow people to go above that? Is that allowed?
No, there's no ceiling. In that contract, yes, we're about 18% share. In that, though, we have about a 21% share in DMS and a 15% share in ESS, so we still have plenty of room to grow.
Okay, and just confirming, maybe for Steve, on the UK restart contribution, I believe you sort of said it was probably going to be break-even first half and then ramping to sort of normal contribution in the second. Was that the case in the first half, or did this move to... given it sounds like it started a little stronger, did it contribute a profit in the EBITDA line in the first half?
Yeah, in the first half, and I think we were expecting it to make a positive contribution to profit in the first half, which it did, and then that stronger second half will be a reflection of the more participants in the program in the second half relative to the ramp up.
And my final one is just on the caseload comment of 580 case of official unemployment versus the 1.2 job seekers. What should we be watching to sort of keep an eye on that 1.2, and how do people qualify if they're not in that official number?
So the numbers I quote you in that, Michael, are the participants in the Job Active program and the Disability Employment Services program. There are a number of other programs that and where their data is not included in unemployment statistics. For example, and this will sound crazy, if you've worked 1 hour, you're considered employed, not unemployed, and that's the definition that governments use for employment. So there is still a really large cohort of unemployed and underemployed people in Australia and globally that our programs are supporting.
Right, so it's an underemployment figure that's probably just as relevant as the unemployment.
Absolutely.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up question from Tim Plum from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Sorry, just 2 more questions from me, if possible. Michael, can you talk to the online cohort within JobActive, where are we at with that cohort? Is there any opportunity for those guys to come down and go through the service provider channel?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Absolutely. So we're currently seeing flows of clients from online to providers as they reach the benchmarks that the government has set for exit out of the system. So there's two ways that clients can flow from online to providers as we speak now. Is one is opt out of online, or two is they reach the period of 12 months being on online before they move to provider landscape. So we're seeing flows of that. Currently in online, we there's about 170,000 Australians in the online system, and you know, many of those are reaching an extended period of being unemployed, and some of them have been unemployed since the online system was introduced in March 2020. But they've moved out and they've moved back in because they've been transitioning in and out of employment. So we do really believe that there will be flow in this. We also, the other thing that we expect is that on our numbers and what we're seeing in terms of the unemployment cohort in the Job Active program, is that we do expect that the projected NESM caseloads in the future program will be higher than originally expected, given the way the data is playing out and the way that the longer term unemployed statistics within the cohort. So we expect that the caseload will be higher.
Okay, so just to clarify, I mean, that was introduced March 20. So does that mean that when we reach March 21, you would automatically get a big boost of people that automatically move out of that channel and into your channel?
Yeah, look, there'll be a number of things that will play out, because there'll be clients that are already in with us that are placed into employment, which we'll continue to support. There'll be clients that will come out of NESM into provider landscape. There'll be clients that go from providers, of course, into NESM and potentially come back out with online. So we certainly feel that the transition rules are currently being worked on by the transition workforce, which we're a party of. And we feel that there'll be a flow of clients that, subject to market share, will result in a good position for a provider like APM.
Great. And then just the last part that I wanted to clarify, a couple of other analysts have touched on it, but in terms of your first half operation, so first half was impacted by lockdowns. You're entering into a period which is arguably better for your business and not impacted by lockdowns. You've got incremental contributions from acquisitions that are coming through. Your prospectus target was 88.7 mil of NPATTAR, and you guys did 56 in the first half, which if I annualise that is at 112. Are there any things that we need to take into consideration below the operational level in terms of first half, second half split?
No, I think if you look at the numbers, our first half EBITDA is 138 million. Over the course of the year, the prospectus is 295. So we had that first half split EBITDA 47%, second half 53%. That lines up with prospectus. First half, I think in my commentary, I said the first half NPAT was 50%, 77 million. Double that is at your 155 million, which lines up with the prospectus. And then we've added in the additional 2.5.
Got it. I mean, I was just talking about the Australian operations, not the group operations.
Oh, sorry.
In terms of the Australian operations? Sorry, what was the question again?
So if I remember correctly, NPATAR guidance for the Australian operations is 88.7. You guys did 56 mil of NPATAR in the first half of 22. And then if I annualise that, it gives me 112. And then we've got acquisitions contributing in the second half and arguably a better operating environment. So I guess my question is just around those Australian operations, how do we think about the second half relative to that first half performance?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Tim. Look, as we say, you know, we're operating in changing markets, and your analysis in terms of the numbers, the maths on the numbers is correct. For us, we don't expect any changes to one-offs in those numbers. However, you know, we note that we are going to operate in a market that stays open. However, there are potential impacts in terms of site operations, individual site operations around the country that will continue to play out, as we've probably all experienced personally, in terms of COVID sites and shutdowns and short-term shutdowns and staffing that can't attend sites and the like. So whilst the market itself we expect will be open, we think that individually there'll be some variability across the sites as we navigate this next period of COVID and Omicron.
Understood. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Tim.
In the interest of time, that does conclude the question and answer session. I'll now hand back to Mr. Michael Anzi for closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to listen to our results presentation. I reiterate what Megan said at the start. You know, we really thank you all for your support. We're excited about the journey ahead as a listed company. You know, for us, knowing our ownership structure, having long-term partners and focusing on the growth ahead of us and delivering more services to the people that we support is a really exciting thing. And it's the right thing for our clients, our stakeholders and our people in the business. And we look forward to sharing this journey with you and keeping in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.